As far as historically speaking, I was born in the Deep South in the state of Mississippi. And I recall defining moments. I remember vividly signs that says water fountain that said colored and whites. And it intrigued me because, frankly, I didn't want to drink out of people that I didn't know. So I wasn't over concerned about drinking out of a white fountain. I was more concerned about the implication of that.
For you.
For me, yeah. Even at a young teenage.
Yeah.
Okay. The other, during my formative years in the Deep South that I vividly remember, is going to the library. And mind you, Eric, at that time, people of color wasn't permitted to go into the library. So I must have been like 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the librarian said, "Who are you?" And I said to her, "Who are you?" And she took a pause and gave me her name, and I gave her my name. I shall never forget what she said next. When I said, "My name is Tommy Miller," she said, "Oh, because of my father's status in the community." She saw me differently. Then she expected me to be in the library to read. I've carried that story with me all my life. Okay, that's just a glimpse of the formative years for me, growing up in the Deep South. And the last thing I want to say on that is, for me, it's been a blessing growing up in the South because I've had to embrace the resiliency of my people from day one.
Yes.
And not to just survive, but to thrive and not to be a victim.
Yes, yes. And Tommy, I made an error as we got started. So I had some of the wrong buttons pushed, and we missed that very beginning part, and we missed that part where you rang the chimes.
Okay.
So I want you to ring the chimes because that is how you start.
Okay.
You have opened up with your life.
Yes.
And I want you to open us up with your chimes.
Okay.
This is a gift that you give in the community when you start a meeting or an event.
Yes.
Yes.
Let me unearth that a little bit before I ring.
Sure.
Eric, if I may. I ring the chimes, symbolic of the power of sharing spaces with other folks. And I believe there's an incredible amount of energy and power when we have mutually respectful dialogues, what I call courageous conversation.
Yes.
So I ring the chimes to set the tone for that. Then at the end of this journey of sharing space, I ring the chimes out of an attitude of gratitude.
And we have begun. We already began, but
yes.
We have begun officially.
Okay.
Now that I got the buttons pushed in the right way. And I beg your pardon, but yes, yes. So you brought some music with you, and this too is a way of marking the beginning. It's Wake Up, Everybody.
Yes.
Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Yes,
do you want
indeed.
To say anything about it, or let
yes.
the music speak on its own?
Well, I just want to quickly say that for me, it's about the children. And there's an African greeting that we greet each other, so how are the children? Because everything is about the children. So I will leave it at that.
Sure.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now. just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and that was Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. Wake up, everybody. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Tommy Miller. So Tommy, I was struck in your introduction how you talked about, you know, the issue with the water fountains wasn't so much that they were segregated white and black, but how they were, or white and colored, but how they were, how you wanted to know who drank at the fountain before you. And the story about the library was you were known as the child of a person who cared about reading, and
yes,
that you were going to be a reader.
Yes.
And those, what about your family allowed you to personalize and put the center, the locus of control in you,
okay,
as opposed to the institution?
Okay. From the day that I was born, I was given messages directly, indirectly, that I am somebody, that I can, and not at the risk of sounding arrogant, mm-hmm, but I come from a family of kings and queens, if you go back to my history.
Uh-huh.
So there's no terminology like victimization,
right,
in my world. I recall having a conversation. I was blessed to, we didn't have nursing homes, Eric, when I was growing up. So during my grandmother's later years, she lived in our home. So I had two mothers.
Uh-huh.
And I remember asking my grandmother a question. I must have been like 4 or 5. Why, if they think that we're less than human, why would they allow us to breastfeed their children? And I didn't have the language to say intimacy.
Right.
But I implied that.
Yeah, why would they trust us with their precious children,
yes,
if they don't value us?
And not only that, but think about what's going into that child,
yeah,
from my beautiful people of color.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are the type of conversation I had. And my grandmother was gently reminding me of who I was and that I have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm. What did she say to you? How did she remind you who you were?
You are. She talked to me about Africa. She talked to me about the Millers, the Browns. That's my family.
Mm-hmm,
And she told me about our history, how we have a rich DNA, and that it was unacceptable for us to become what we're trying to change. So she never told me I was better than anybody else.
Right.
She let me know who I was.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I'm reacting because you're telling a powerful story.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, she put your life in perspective.
Yes.
You know, in terms of Christianity and Judaism, the two,
yes,
great sins are, mm-hmm, idolatry, which is,
yes,
not seeing reality clearly.
Yes. Yes.
And the other one is iniquity, where you have, mm-hmm, too high or low,
yes,
of an opinion of yourself.
Yes.
If you have too high an opinion, you take advantage of other people.
Yes.
If you have too low opinion, you let them take advantage,
yes,
of you. And you want to be right-sized.
Yes.
And she helped to right-size you.
Yes. I call it having a happy medium as far as being assertive.
Sure.
But at the same time, having compassionate,
mm-hmm,
for other folks, because my elders, if you will,
sure,
taught me that taught me to question the oppressor versus the oppressed. Who's who?
Right.
So I was armed with that knowledge as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Cool. So that is a powerful shaping experience in your life. What have been some others?
Okay.
What have you had to learn? You know, what have you been able to learn?
Okay.
That you maybe see it's been harder for other people, given the fact that they didn't necessarily have the start that you've had.
Okay. Well, before I say that,
sure.
My grandmother not only verbalized that, and my aunts and uncles and cousins, they lived it.
Mm-hmm.
I observed how they interacted. Eric, part of my education came from the barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting around listening to the old men's talking, and they were guiding us and they were reprimanding us, but we felt safe. And mm-hmm. we felt love. I guess today it would be called a village. Back then, we didn't call it a village. It was what it was.
Right. And did your father work in the bar? I mean, was he working in the barbershop, or was that?
No, my father, I'm a General Motors brat.
Okay.
But my father didn't work in the barbershop, but the barbershop and the church is where young men like me could go and feel not only physically, emotionally safe.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And mind you, we're talking about Jim Crow times.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And we
still are, by the way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I want to share this, and the barbershop in working class white communities played the same kind of role as did the church.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had benches out on the street that the old men sat in
mm-hmm.
when they weren't in the barbershop. And I grew up under the eye of, because my dad died when I was young,
mm-hmm.
Under the eye of these men born in the 1890s and early 1880s, 90s, early 1900s, who would just kind of, you know, size me up. You know, they look mm-hmm. at you and they'll let you know what they think. They'll ask your opinion and then they'll come mm-hmm. back with something else. I mean, it takes you seriously as a person.
Yes.
And when you've been taken seriously as a person, it's very hard to not take others seriously.
Yeah. I don't know about your description of the barber shop and the benches outside, but my barber shop, Eric, was an extension, and I'm in your ears when I say this,
sure.
An Underground Railroad.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where we went to find out what was really going on
mm-hmm.
and how we could coexist, and not only coexist, but thrive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And another piece of this particular community, the rural, the agrarian revolt that came after the Civil War, where poor whites were trying to get their rights vis-a-vis banking and railroad interests.
Yes.
That was a large part of the community that I grew up in. And the echoes of that were the president of the National Farmers Organization, which was one of the last cooperatives that mm-hmm. came out of that era, was in that community and in that congregation that I grew up in.
This is Wisconsin.
No, this is Missouri.
This is
North Missouri. The issue is economic class for us, and how to navigate that in a world of privilege, but not race. And what you're saying is this is the Underground Railroad, and I want to just highlight both of those.
So
that's powerful.
Yes.
And you're right, I need to open my ears to hear those
statements
clearly.
Yes.
So what brought you to this area? What brought you to upstate New York?
Okay.
Or how did you navigate your way here? Because you've been a few other places, I imagine, along the way.
Yes. I didn't navigate. God ordered my footsteps. And I did not know that at the time, but I thought I came from, and I live in Cortland. My calling here is in Ithaca. But I came to Cortland from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and if you're not from New York, of course, you got to go to New York City.
Right.
I mean, that's a mandate, that's a given. So as the word to use, navigate, I navigated myself throughout New York State, Goshen, Newburgh. I could go on and on and on. I ended up in Cortland, and it reminded me of home. This is in 1980. And I remember I was horrified. I met this gentleman who's now a very close acquaintance of mine. We go way back now. I knocked on his door, Eric, and the door came open. I was petrified because I'm thinking somebody's thinking I'm breaking into the house.
You're just knocking on the door and it flies open.
Right. Because back then people wasn't locking their doors.
Right.
So I felt very comfortable because it reminded me of down south. Mm-hmm. And I say this with admiration. I see Cortland as country.
I see. And
it reminds me, even though I did not grow up on a farm, I grew up in the city.
Right.
In my town, Lewisville, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
But Cortland had that quaint feel to it. I did not know. In retrospect, now I know what was going on. I thought I was just coming home, if you will.
Right.
I did not want to go back and live in the South.
Right. So what was going on that you know now?
What I know now is God, as I mentioned, ordered my footsteps. I had my born-again experience in Cortland. Eric, the last thing, no disrespect, the last thing when I was in school, any school, was serving God. That wasn't on my, whatever you want to call it, that wasn't part of my...
Your consciousness.
Yes, it wasn't part of my consciousness. Even though I grew up down south with, in order to drive the family car on Sunday, I had to go to church. And we always had a big Bible on the, mm-hmm. on the table and stuff. But I did not have an intimate relationship.
You did not internalize it.
Right. So that's what happened in Cortland.
So tell me about that born-again experience. I'm going to call it a core conversion experience.
Okay.
The born-again. What happened to you? How did things change?
All right. And within your comfort zone, I'll let you label it the way you want to. For me, it's a born-again experience because I was born again.
Yes.
I was like a blind man in a dark room. Looking for a black cat that wasn't even there.
Right.
I was lost as to who I was, Eric. And I've always had an inquisitive, analytical mind.
Uh-huh.
And I want to try to put all this together because, mind you, I graduated from high school in 1970. So we're talking Malcolm X, Dr. King, the Kennedys. I saw a lot of people who I perceived were in position to bring harmony to the races, and we collectively killed them.
Right.
So
by 1970, the anger and the frustration was at fever pitch at that point.
Yes. So I was trying to make sense of all of this, and it didn't make sense to me until I became a born when I surrendered, if you will, and understood how to have peace for me. And I say peace for me. We're talking about me.
Right.
And it's not passing judgment on anybody else. So
right.
I don't have a religion, by the way, Eric. I have a spirituality.
Yeah.
Let's clarify that. Okay.
Good. No. And that's, This is one of the points of this show is for people to clarify the subtle distinctions of their life, of mm-hmm. their lives, their values, their religion or spirituality, their philosophy, their ethics. So between 1970 and 1980, what happened that propelled you to this?
Okay. I had a good time.
Yeah.
I was young.
Uh-huh.
I'm still young, but
chronologically
I'm a little bit older. And I was a bachelor.
Uh-huh.
Living what I thought was a good life. And even though I was born in the South, I grew up in northern cities because and states because there was some... My parents would want me to broaden my horizon,
right.
So I would be in some big city. So,
is that how you got to Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And where? And so you were having a good time. What's wrong with a good time, though?
It's nothing wrong with a good time, but for me, frankly, it was time to grow up.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
I am a. I grew up with four sisters. My two brothers was much older than me. So I was spoiled. I remember I had a grandmother that lives in the house.
Yep.
With my mother and father. So I lived a privileged life.
Mm-hmm.
And but you reach a point when I think for me anyway, it's time to grow up.
Right.
So
right.
I met my former wife. My children were born in Cortland. I started serving God. I've always been in the human service field in some shape or manner, but it wasn't serving God in my mind.
Right. And with the reality of the barbershops that echo the Underground Railroad and with the reality of race in the Jim Crow South, you can still say that in your micro family, you lived a privileged life.
Yes.
And that's, there was a time that you had to grow up.
Yes.
That is, and putting it in all of that context, which we often don't have that kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Sometime, Eric, the love can hurt. I remember receiving a physical injury, and I went home, and my family loved me, but I wasn't recuperating because I needed to do it on my own.
Right.
I believe in the circle courage model. Native American, my tribe is Choctaw, from Philadelphia, Mississippi. But sometimes I can love you with good intentions, and it may cripple you.
Yes.
So I need to divorce myself for some of the privilege. And when I say privilege, I'm talking about love. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about knowing that regardless of what I do or don't do, I had the comfort, I had the serenity of knowing that my family would love me through whatever.
Right, right.
Okay. Right. If that, I mean, use one of your terms. Did that make sense?
Absolutely. And I'm going to take it to terms that aren't my terms, but they're other people's terms.
Okay.
The story of Siddhartha.
Okay.
Is the privileged prince who grew up in the household with nothing and then has to go out in the world to discover what the problem is. And the problem is suffering. And then how do you deal with suffering? Mm-hmm. And that leads to, eventually, to the disciplines of the Buddha.
Yes.
And what I'm seeing in your own narrative is you've had to go through a parallel journey out of that safety and security.
Yes.
But you had to choose it.
Absolutely. And I can underscore that with, in my community, when I was growing up, when one died in the community, all the neighbors would take up money and buy a reef, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a designated person to do that. And all my neighbors would say, "Oh, Tommy, what a very nice young man you are." I got in about the 8th and 9th grade and said, "I don't want to do this anymore. It's somebody else's turn." I noticed how my neighbors were saying, "Look at him. He's changing." And I've never forgotten that. And what I'm leading up to is I, in my journey or my narrative, I have to embrace the dark side of Tommy.
Yeah.
I've always felt I was a good person and I care about your humanity and my humanity. But there's a dark side that I had to embrace in order to really, really appreciate the light side.
Yeah. I'm going to want to come back there, but I want to go to a song first.
Okay.
Let's just take a musical break. What should we play next?
Pick one.
Okay, well, you've got John Legend, you got Yolanda Adams, "The Battle Is Not Yours," which might be a good segue into the dark side. I'm not sure or not. Yeah. Here we go.
Feel no
was Yolanda Adams. Yolanda Adams and The Battle Is Not Yours. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Tommy Miller. So, Tommy, you said that to get to follow your path.
Yes.
And I'm going to guess that there was a little bit of your choosing and a little of your being led on this one. You had to choose to face your dark side. Or your what was the word you used for that?
I don't know what I used, but that's a good description. I was trying to find me. And part of me is the side that I'm trying to improve. Mm-hmm. And I call that the dark side. For me, it's okay to, I have no problem for me embracing the bright side of me.
Right.
It's the times when I'm not loving you to the best of my ability for whatever reason.
Right.
I need to own that. Okay. And there's a part of me that's selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I call the dark side, because I did not grow up appreciate that there was a dark side.
Right. You were loved with such light.
Yes.
That it was probably hard for you to see the parts of you that were not bright to the light.
Oh, let me correct you if I may, and all due respect.
Sure.
Now, it wasn't hard. It was excruciating painful. It was agony.
To face the
to
darkness.
To face that.
Got it.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely.
I minimized it in what I said, but
you're right
to come back. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you do that? How did your life change so that you could walk both in the awareness of the darkness and walk in the light, to use the Christian metaphor?
I became still. And I put myself in a space where I had to look at me without any distractions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had to introduce myself to me. And again, this is many, many years ago. It wasn't easy. But once I...
That's all right.
Wow.
You can silence it. It's fine. It's good. Yeah.
Once I did that, it was a major breakthrough. I thought I had silenced this. I apologize to you and the listeners.
That's all right. It happens.
Okay. Yes.
We are humans.
Yes, we are. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the pathway, Eric. Once I realized that, wait a minute, there's another side of Tommy.
Right.
Then I became okay. And that was an invitation for me to look at whatever I want to look at.
Okay. Okay, so help me walk through this a little
bit.
Okay. So when were you, had you gone through the born-again experience
before? No, oh, absolutely this was, not.
You began to question before the born-again experience.
Yes, yes. The born-again experience helped me to understand what I call this madness. When we don't treat each other, I'm not just talking about race, I'm talking about as human beings, homo sapiens, if you will, that we have issues around power. Mm-hmm. And just being, okay. When I accepted the dark side of me, I felt like I was becoming whole. And then I was in a position to embrace what I frame as my spirituality, my Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I wasn't ready before that. I had to have the experiences that I had.
What took you through the terror?
Okay.
And the humbling
to
be able to sit with yourself and see the blindness, the negativity, the harm, as well as the wonder.
It starts with a P. Pain. Pain. I didn't have inner peace. And no matter what society said would cause one to have peace, that didn't work for me. Something was always missing.
So what did you try to erase the pain or to address the pain?
Oh, come on, I'm from the 70s.
Sure, yeah.
And also, just as anybody else on this planet, you know, you do a lot of stuff to try to medicate the pain.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so what changed, what forced the facing off?
Okay. What forced the facing up was the reality that I wanted to grow up. And I needed to do this on my own. even though I've been blessed, and when I say blessed, I have a loving family, we continue to go at it. I don't mean that this is the, you know.
Yeah.
But we always love each other. Mm-hmm. But I needed to stand on my own two feet. And I needed to have some solitude. And it was time. I knew it was time. No one else knew it was time. Because, Eric, I was cool. I was cool. You wouldn't know that I didn't have the inner peace.
Right.
But I knew.
You kept up appearances.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And how long was this process of facing the pain for you?
I don't remember. Too long.
Yeah. And I don't want to dwell on this too long, because we've circled around it three or four times, and each time it's brought out a different facet of the diamond that is your life.
Yes.
And that can be enough.
Okay.
And we can move on. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Tommy Miller. And we have two other songs. I'd like to play one now, and then we'll play one at the end. But one of them is John Legend and Glory.
Okay.
And the other one is Jesus is Love. What would you like to go to next? Glory. Okay.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh,
glory. Glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up. One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, glory. Oh,
glory, glory.
Now the war is not over. Victory isn't won. But we'll fight on to the finish. And then when it's all done, we'll cry glory. Oh, glory. Oh,
glory.
Selma is now. For every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win a war individually. It take the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory. One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, glory.
Glory.
Oh,
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Tommy Miller. So, Tommy,
yes.
I want to go back to something you said early on. And that is that you are no longer charting your life, but you're being led.
Yes.
And that is rhetoric, which I think has really important feet, as it were. But it's also rhetoric that's not understood by a lot of people who aren't comfortable with spiritual language.
Okay.
So what has changed for you? What does it mean for you to be led?
Okay. What it means is every day I try to, and let me qualify this by saying it's a work in progress, but I try to kill my ego. I don't serve man, Eric. I serve God. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to have patience with anyone, regardless of the pigmentation of the skin, regardless of the sexual orientation, on and on and on. I like to share with you and your listener a story that happened that would illustrate this. East St. Louis, Missouri, Tommy Miller, big afro, big bell bottoms, super cool. We were going to the club, my boys and I. It's a nice July evening. And a police officer, and at that time, the police officer's cars was black and white, mm-hmm, and the majority of them was white. This officer said, "Excuse me, can I see you?" My boys scattered. Mind you, this is in the 70s.
Right, okay. Right.
He opened the police car, the back door, and when the police opened that door, it locks, like safety locks for children.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. He turned around, and he looked at me, and I said, "Officer, what did I do?" He said, "Well, you didn't do anything." And he waited, and then he said, seemed like it was an eternity, but he said, "Beware of strangers, for some have entertained angels unaware. Beware of strangers, for some have entertained angels unaware." Eric, fast forward. Uh-huh, so, First of all, I forget what else he said. My daughter.
He's quoting Genesis, another.
Yes,
to you,
so, yeah. My daughter said, when I told her this story, when she was like 5, she said, "Daddy, what color was he?" I said, "He was white, baby." And that car disappeared. It did not have time to make the block. And every time I share this story, I get chills. Fast forward to Cortland, New York. Mm-hmm. Years later, I go to a dentist. On his wall was a poster, "Beware of strangers, for some have entertained angels unaware."
Yep.
He said, "I'm supposed to give this to you." He gave me that. We don't have time, but I can give you many, sure, many examples of how my experiences has led me,
right,
to serve God. So when I say that I let the Lord order, I attempt to let the Lord order my footsteps, what I do that people call an occupation is a calling. Mm-hmm. It's more than a living for me.
Yes.
So every day I get up and ask God to tell me what to do. I fail miserably at that half the time, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, but that's the goal.
Right, right. And I am going to take the risk.
Okay.
I'm going to take the risk that I may in some way trivialize a little bit what you said, but I want to translate it into a language that I think some people can hear who may not be able to hear that asking God what God wants me to do language. If you wake up in the morning and you look at the whole of the world around you, which is another way of saying looking at God and beyond, and you look in it to see where am I being pulled today, then you're submitting to God's leading you by any other means. And it's when you start your life, what the story you're telling me is your life began when you could see the darkness and the light, and when you submitted to this being led into it in a way that you hadn't had before. We feel our participation in glory, as the song said, or in destiny, when we sense, keep our eyes and ears and hearts open to what's here, what's missing in the people in front of us, what's here, what's missing, so that we can slow down. And your rhetoric, from my point of view, is slow down, take notice.
Yes.
Slow down, take notice. Yeah. And that's a skill.
Yeah. Well, and for me, That's a pretty, that's a nice description. But I call it performing your humanity.
Okay. Yes. All right. Yep.
Because Tommy, we call it the flesh.
Yep.
And I'll let you unearth that for your listeners. But I feel, based on systemic racism,
mm-hmm.
White privilege, and some other stuff,
sure.
I would be extremely angry. And notwithstanding how I was brought up, I'm today, and as mushy as it may sound, I'm an ambassador of love.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I know what God has done in my life, and I don't suppose to become what I'm trying to change. So when I wake up in the morning,
mm-hmm.
I have to, again, be still.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right. And if what you have to face is a legitimate rage at injustice, you cannot face that if you are not grounded in affection.
Yes.
Affection for the victims and compassion for the perpetrators that they may be different.
We have a saying in Whoever We Are, and I read this, and I wish I could remember who wrote it, but it said, you cannot tear down the master's house by using his tools. All right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And my way of saying is, don't let your enemy define your agenda.
Yes, well stated.
And,
well stated.
And we just need to go back to that over and over and over again.
I have to say that. Sure. Let me interject, Eric. Sure. I think it would be hypocritical for me to say I'm a ambassador of love and don't love someone who don't think, smell, act, and think the way I do. Don't embrace my spirituality or what have you. So that I want to clarify that.
Yeah, yeah.
When you mentioned the language and
sure.
the rhetoric. Yeah.
Right, and it is part of performing our humanity and living in our flesh.
Yes,
that we are not always skillful at communicating with people we would like to communicate with.
Okay.
Because we either do not know how, or there have been systematic barriers that have kept us from learning mm-hmm. how.
Yes, for me, Eric, I like folks remind me that I endure a spirited conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not uncomfortable with a conflict. But some folks are not comfortable with conflict, and I have to be mindful of that.
You have to be kind to them.
Yes, yes.
And that's condescending, but that is
yes.
knowing where people are going off the rails because it's too much. And I too, grew up in an environment where conflict was normative, and I have had to slow down. And be sensitive.
Conflict is an opportunity. Doesn't have to be negative.
Yeah,
okay?
yeah. And it's also a good, when you live your humanity, you consent to the drama of your life.
Okay.
Without shame.
Yes, yes.
Without shame.
Yes.
And many of us struggle with being ashamed of the reality of our life.
And I think you and I had this conversation and some other folks when in my world, in my language, that's not failure, it's missed opportunities. And I remember you challenged me, which I appreciate. Can you really embrace success without owning failure? For me, when I wake up, for example, this morning,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing my best right now. My best may not be what you or your listener need. So it's not a failure.
Right.
It may be a missed opportunity for
right.
me to
right.
look at how I can engage them in a way that's affirming to them.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah,
I've been waiting to clarify that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And a failure is only something measured from a fairly discrete
yeah.
point of
yes.
view.
Yeah.
When you take the bigger picture, it's just all part of the process.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And yes, yes. One of the things that I enjoy is the quickness with which you are willing to offer to tell me, hey, I need you to hear this and
yes.
and not crucify me and also
yeah.
not let me get away with it.
Right. And well, that's a nice segue for me to say, Dan, Eric, thank you for this pathway because you mentioned not to trivialize it, but you want to speak in a language that some listeners
mm-hmm.
can
mm-hmm.
hear.
And I'm being presumptuous to think
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but if I want to engage your listener, they want to engage me. We learn how to communicate within our own frame because, for me, it really isn't rhetoric. It's a life. Well, it's our relationship. And when I describe it, it may feel to sound like rhetoric.
No. And this is where you have heard the term in a belittling way.
Yes.
Whereas, in a certain sense, all we have is the rhetoric of the ways in which the words and mm-hmm. the passions with which we express our life.
Yeah.
And that puts the word really in a high spot.
Yeah.
But yes, yes, it's often used to belittle, and I don't mean it that way.
Well, and I know you don't. I feel your spirit, Eric. I've always felt your spirit. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice segue for me to say, which I think sometimes we as a people, as a human family, we try too hard to engage. Some of us feel people's spirit. It's not so much what you say.
Mm-hmm.
It's that spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And in that way, we could do the whole show in silence. But since this is a radio show, it would be
I like that.
Off.
Yes.
It would be illegal because we're not supposed to have that much dead air.
Yes.
But that's exactly right.
Yes.
The way I like to close the show out,
okay,
and can we segue?
Yes.
What do you do, and you've already alluded to these or spoken to them a few times, but what do you do on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, yearly basis to restore yourself intellectually, emotionally, physically, spiritually?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do, and how do you know when you need to do that?
Okay. Let me start with how do I know. I know when I'm not balanced. By my definition of balance.
Sure.
I don't feel right, okay? I pray as far as spiritually. I find solitude. Because my calling is with people, I crave my solitude.
Right.
I need to be with Tommy. And I did a support group, and some of the young men, it was co-ed, they laughed at first until they got it. I need to date Tommy.
Uh-huh.
I need to spend time with Tommy.
Yeah, I need to care for myself the way I would for somebody else.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I be still. I listen to my spirit. And I do a lot of looking within myself. And I believe in restoration. So I travel. I ride my bike, read my Bible. Sometime, Eric, I love traveling. Can't afford to travel as much as I want to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can sit in an airport for hours and just watch people.
Right.
That restores me because I believe in the beauty of people. Even when Tommy's behavior is not beautiful, mm-hmm. we are beautiful people as a human family.
Right.
With some behaviors that's problematic.
Right. Yeah. So I want to do two things here.
Okay.
What do you notice? When do you notice that you're running off the rails, or when do you notice that? And what specifically are you doing that catches your attention?
When I'm testy with you.
Okay.
When I'm not as patient as I normally am. When I don't give you the benefit of the doubt.
And those are all things that I wouldn't necessarily know you're experiencing.
No, you would not.
Yeah.
No, because it's not about you at that point.
Right. It's about you. I mean, that's the point.
Yes.
When we take care of ourselves, it's not that other people are telling us.
Yes.
It's that we are monitoring
without
being obsessively vigilant.
Exactly.
Just open.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, too, am a person who can watch people for hours.
Yes.
And I take delight because I will want to, why did they move that way? And why were they talking in that way?
Yes.
What was the topic that was, had them so whatever?
Yes.
Why was their body language what it was?
Yes.
You know, how do you practice, and it's not watching television, it's not watching movies, it's not media, you're watching people in your world. How do you create the, you're in an airport, that's one way, but how do you do that more routinely in your life?
Okay, all right. I often, people tell me sometimes that I need to smile more. They say, and this is them, that perception that my smile lights up the room.
Right, and when you're not, and they notice you're not smiling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that I'm not balanced because I'm not smiling. But what I do, and I did it at Wegmans yesterday, I was teasing this young couple. They had their food, and after they ate, they cleared the table. So I teasingly said to the young lady, you trained him well. He He moved his food. He washed his hand. So we ended up having a dialogue. She was a graduate student. He uh-huh. worked with developmental folks. And they thanked me for starting the conversation. It felt right. I don't always do that.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. And also I enjoy, I get immense pleasure out people trying to guess what I do.
Uh-huh.
Because...
No, you dress in Afrocentric garb, which yeah. tells us nothing about your profession. It does
yes.
tell us a lot that you are a person or a force to be reckoned with. In that sense, it's, yeah,
okay.
and that's, there's a there. There's
okay.
no ambivalence. There's no ambiguity in some sense. How do you know, as an when you're kind of in observing mode, mm-hmm. you're taking in, and one's face does become not sad or angry, but there's a blank expression which people read into it, what mm-hmm. they want to read into it. Mm-hmm. And then when you engage, you mm-hmm. light up. That's
right.
the way people do.
Right.
How do you feel that
okay.
transition?
Right. And you can appreciate this, Eric, given your own spirituality and your research and study. I have a spirit of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And I can discern people's spirits and stuff, so I take my cues from that. And also I believe in, as far as human action, the power of apology.
Yes.
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 And I apologize to myself as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That is a beautiful, beautiful image. And when you discern, you take what may be a risk, but it's a risk
yes.
that you've chosen.
Yes.
And it may not go the way you think it will when you've
right.
discerned it. But if you apologize or move on, it
yes.
works. It works. It
yes.
works. Tommy, it's wonderful to get to know you.
And it's reciprocal, Eric.
Yeah. We're going to close with Lionel Richie's Jesus is Love. Do
okay.
you want to say anything or just let that speak for itself?
I'm going to let that speak to itself, but I want to thank you and also the listener who... allowed us to share our thoughts and stuff.
Share their Sunday morning.
Yeah. I'm going to quickly ring the chimes
yes,
out
yes,
of an
yes,
attitude
yes.
of gratitude
yes.
for sharing space with you, Eric, and indirectly your listener. Ready?
Yes.
Father, help your children. Don't let them fall by the side of the road. And teach them to love one another, that heaven might find a place in their heart. Down, and I know he's mine forever in my heart. We've got to walk on through. Cause his love and his wisdom will be our helping hand. I know the truth and his word will be our salvation. Lift up our hearts to be thankful. The Jesus is love. He won't let you down.
Folks, this morning you've listened to Tommy Miller share his testimony, and he invites your feedback and your discussion at the email address tmiller.sohowarethechildren@gmail.com. tmiller.sohowarethechildren@gmail.com.